The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
Wendy, it doesn't matter how cool we think we are as Canadians or as Torontonians specifically. We always get a little bit giddy or very giddy when we get a slice of the American pie.
Well, yeah, like maybe an NBA franchise. Not for me, but for me, the Cheesecake Factory. I get all excited.
Two excellent examples, and they're so similar. It doesn't always work, though. Target was a fiasco.
Target
was a fiasco. I don't think the Real Housewives of Toronto did too well either.
Well, we are kind of a unique market, which brings us to law and order.
Dun, dun. I practiced, okay?
I can tell. I was going to, and then I was afraid I'd get it wrong.
Oh, so I'm glad. Right.
No, that sounds good. Yeah, so that one, Law & Order Toronto, criminal intent. It's launched in this country. There's a lot of excitement, a lot of anticipation about it. The original show was set in New York back in 1990, which of course was yesterday, but it wasn't. Anyway, along with several franchises, it's become the longest running scripted primetime series in television history, I think.
Second only to The Simpsons, which is kind of odd, but there's a lot of pressure to make this work, taking this legendary, time-honored show and making it work in a Canadian setting.
Yeah, so it's got Canadian writers, director, actors, which brings us to this week's guest, Tassie Cameron. She's a highly accomplished award-winning writer and director. She's worked on such acclaimed Canadian TV series as Degrassi, Flashpoint, Pretty Hard Cases, Rookie Blue.
It's no surprise that Tassie was tapped to be the showrunner for Law & Order Toronto with all that that entails. So here to talk about the crushing responsibility thrust upon her is Tassie Cameron. Welcome, Tassie.
Hi, it's so great to be here with you wonderful women.
Yeah, so congrats.
Yeah.
And don't mess it up.
Thank you. Yes, I was getting nervous all over again just hearing the intro. I am not a director, by the way. Just I am a writer and a producer, but I've never directed.
You're a showrunner. What is that? What do you do? You wrote it and then...
The showrunner is the sort of holds the creative reins to some degree. It's usually the head writer, almost always the head writer on the show. But I am involved in casting, in budgets, in editing, in all wardrobe, hair, the whole everything.
The whole thing.
So it's just somebody who is trying to nurture the show forward on both creative, like writing level, but also production.
So I can see why they wanted you. And this may sound a little odd, but it has to be daunting, not only because it's a hugely successful show and all its franchises and historical at this point, but it's also very defined and it has very specific parameters. And you knew that going in. So there's not a lot of opportunity to put an individual stamp on it.
I competed for the job, first of all. There were a couple of writers that they were trying out. And so at first I sort of thought, well, this will be a great intellectual challenge. You know, I won't get the job I'll have learned something. So that's how it started. So I didn't feel that crushing weight of responsibility yet because I didn't have the job. So I wrote I figured out which pilot story I was going to tell and wrote it. And I got the IKEA instructions, we call them, from the Wolf team about how to write criminal intent. And I sort of moved forward. And in the writing of it, honestly, I thought it would be easier than it was. It's very, very hard to write this show. It's all A story. It needs 10,000 times more clues than any other mystery I've tried to write before. And there is, and you know, we were creating the characters. I was creating the characters from scratch. So there is some room in that to put your own stamp on it. I mean, the female character of Bateman, her mom's a journalist. My mom's a journalist. You know, we get to have kind of build the characters with things that are important to ourselves, the writers. And you get to tackle cases and subject matters that interest you. So there's a bit more room to play than I thought there would be.
I want to talk about your mom, but we can save that. We're still on Law and Order. But did you like grow up with that? You obviously, she's a journalist and has written a lot about crime and whatever. And I knew her. But did you grow up with Law and Order? Like, did it mean a lot to you to get this?
I think anybody of my age has grown up with Law and Order. I mean, I remember watching the original bit, which I thought was amazingly good. And I think I was watching that before I even knew I'd be working in television. So, you know, I was watching it as a viewer. And it's just, I mean, it's always been on. It's just, you know, it's what you watch when you got a cold, or it's what you watch when you're in a hotel in a faraway place, and you want a kind of mystery that will wrap up and be satisfying. And so, I mean, it was by the time I kind of got the job, I was in kind of shock and horror that I was going to have to take this on. And I felt like so many Canadians were invested in this in a different way than anything I've worked on before. So yes, I mean, taking on an iconic franchise like this was very nerve-wracking.
So this is Criminal Intent. So I'm going to get this wrong. So there was Law and Order, and there was Law and Order, and I always call it SUV, which is not.
Isn't that what it is?
It all happens in a four-wheel drive car. It's SVU, Special Victims Unit, and then there's Criminal Intent. Why did we get this one, or why did you get the? Why is this the Toronto one, the Criminal Intent one?
The choice of this particular franchise was made before I was involved. I think it was for a couple of reasons. I think partly because Law & Order Criminal Intent is not on the air currently. So, you know, I think that they were interested, the team in the States were interested in having one that wasn't already on the air. I think that from what I understand, it's Dick Wolf's favorite of his franchises. So I think he was very excited to try and get this up and running in another place. And I think that there was a feeling that this was suited to Canadian storytelling on some level, because it's not high action. It's quite cerebral, this one, and that it's more about the Holmes, Sherlock and Watson kind of dynamic that they thought would be good for Canadian audiences. I think that they, you know, that we don't, Canadians don't, in my experience, don't love a huge amount of running around with guns in a kind of fake action hero way, you know? So
the whole Canadian thing is fascinating. And I must say, we have seen Canadian scenes before. You can't identify Canadian things, but the Toronto skyline, Lake Ontario, it was kind of great to see. So I wonder, like, are we going to be seeing is Canada cool now?
I'm with you. When I first started thinking about the show, I thought about the font, the title, and our skyline. And it actually almost makes me well up sometimes thinking about it. And I designed the first episode to really try and be a love letter to the city. And so I thought, what better way to start on a boat with our skyline right there and really kind of hit some of my favorite neighborhoods, Little India, Chinatown. You know, I was trying hard with the first episode to show Canadians and Torontonians that we would be, that the city was a star of the show. And yeah, we episode four, the one that's coming out next Thursday, we shoot in City Hall. We shoot in they let us into City Hall.
Wow.
Which is incredible in a show about, you know, politicians. And so we've tried to pick really interesting locations, really diverse locations. It's mostly downtown Toronto this season. I think we're hoping to expand out a little bit if we get a second season, but it's really fun. It's one of the most fun things about working on the show. And people are really open to letting us shoot. I mean, people are like, sure, you can come, except for transit. Especially if you're a transit death.
Is that coming? Well, it's about time, I must say, because, I mean, we're big. like Toronto is big, Canada is big. So like, I know that we're not quite a secret anymore, but it's nice to see it emblazoned the way that you have.
It's nice to see Toronto playing Toronto and being celebrated as Toronto, because up until recently, every time you've watched an American movie and you see something, you go, hey, wait a second, that's the Royal Bank Plaza. I mean, and then everybody goes, woo-hoo-hoo. And now it's just what it is.
I think a lot of Canadian television writers feel defensive about this because some of it, I mean, me included, you know, I've been setting Toronto as Toronto in shows that I've been making for a long time. But there's something, I think your intro said it beautifully, there's something about when it's embraced by a franchise so big, it just changes the game.
So you were involved in casting, I'm sorry, I didn't write down his last name, Aiden and Kathleen are the detectives. He's from Atlanta, Canada, and you can tell from his accent. I love that. I just, there are little Canadianisms that would maybe not be perceived by a non-Canadian audience, but I do really love that. You brought up guns, and that brings up the whole question of the justice system here, and our laws are different. You're not going to have a lot of gun event. I mean, even though we do have guns, I'm not naive, but you know, you're not allowed to carry them around. So that brings its own challenge. And then the justice system is quite different. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you handle that?
We're trying to be as authentic to our country, our laws, our rules, our legal system as possible, which is why we sort of mistakenly, in a way, put an extra in a judge's robe in the very first episode in the background. And actually, they're not really supposed to walk around on the street in their robes, which we learned afterwards.
Well, at least they don't wear those wigs like in the UK. They wear those wigs. I'm like, get off the wigs.
I think it's called King's Council now. I think they still wear wigs.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you haven't been in a courtroom lately.
Well, so probably a good thing. But sorry, Tassie, go ahead.
We, from that kind of very first episode, had decided we're going to be very as true as possible. I mean, we're making television. You're always taking license in your storytelling to some degree. But, you know, that we're just going to lean into our Canadian systems and laws and, you know, explain them if we need to, but just kind of proceed that people are smart. People will figure it out in other countries that we do things a little differently. I think the weirdest one for the writers was that I don't think any of us off the top realized that you're not entitled to a lawyer present when you're...
You're not?
No.
No. You've watched too much Law and Order.
I know that you can't... My son's in law school and he was just, you can't approach the bench. There's all sorts of things. But I had no idea you're not entitled to a lawyer.
You're not in. If you've been arrested,
wrong.
You're entitled to be questioned. They can let you have a lawyer, and often they do, apparently, because you'll say more if you have a lawyer there. But I mean, it kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
I kept calling we have a Crown prosecutor and a very top defense lawyer as consultants, and I kept calling them saying, are you sure?
Sure.
Can't be right. Yeah.
So are people more familiar with the show, like with American law, than they are with Canadian law? I mean, I'm not, obviously, I'm using myself as an example. I didn't know that there were still wigs, but are there a lot of misconceptions?
That's the biggest one, I think. You know, and the reading the rights is different here. And so there's a lot of the tropes you see on television are American, and you have to kind of undo that when you're telling Canadian a show with a Canadian legal component, but the lawyer one was the main thing that surprised me, and I realized how much of what I think about law comes from American television, which was embarrassing. So,
hey there, just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things. We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to Substack.com and look us up by name, or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
You mentioned off the top about IKEA instructions, which I thought was pretty funny, but without showing us how the sausage is made, can you tell us what some of the guidelines are when it comes to law? Like, there's a way of lighting things. There's a way, they said, the way of walking and talking. That's the way it's shot. And I know that the actors themselves had to figure out that you can't both stand with your arms crossed, though that's probably just a good directorial point anyway. But are there codes that you can tell us, or would that be letting the cat out of the bag?
The IKEA instructions that I was referring to, and I probably shouldn't call them that. I wish they were as simple as IKEA instructions, but that we all know that that's IKEA instructions are not at all simple.
You just throw them out and
yeah, it's
and
the
bang.
First thing you do is throw out the manual.
That's right. And look for that Allen key. In our case, it was more about the scripts. It was more about how to construct an episode. So we did not get a kind of document or anything that talked to us about how to shoot it or how to light it. Or we had a lot of consulting people in the US who would consult with us and talk to us about how to do it. But a lot of it was us just watching their shows and sort of figuring out what they did. In terms of us, it was more criminal intent is very specific because you go into the points of view of the criminals. So it would sort of outline how many times you would, they call them cutaways, how many times you would do a cutaway, one per act, and where they could be. And, you know, so that it was more on that level about how to structure the script.
Was it hard for Americans to get their head around Toronto as being a place where there's a lot of crime? Because
yeah, Jimmy Kimmel made some joke about that.
Yeah, there seems to be this idea about that, we all say sorry and we're all polite and we're all really nice. Well, we're not. There's lots of crime that happens in Toronto. You've got lots to talk about.
They seem fairly knowledgeable about Toronto. And, you know, I think that any fears that we were too peaceful and gentle a city were assuaged when we sent our kind of first research document where we're like, here are the 8,000 crimes we could use as inspiration, you know.
Strange badge of honor, isn't it? Hey, yeah. Look, we've got a lot of crap that happens here. It was Jimmy Kimmel said, I think it was our Miranda right, was you have the right to say sorry. His comment about it. You're not allowed to tell us what the, I mean, I've read some of the clues, you know, I believe there's a crack smoking politician coming up.
Gee, I wonder who that is.
Yeah, I know. But there are some horrible stories that have happened that do happen here, just like anywhere else. And I wonder how you feel, Tassie, about writing about some things that are, I mean, for it's entertainment, but it also involves some brutality that has been visited on the victims.
It's a very good question and a very challenging one to deal with. And there are some crimes that have to be handled very, very delicately. I would say Bruce MacArthur would be such a case that we didn't tackle Bruce MacArthur in season one, and we may tackle it, but...
So that's a story about murdering men and a serial killer. He's what he's been accused of, just in case people don't know. But
or have forgotten. Case,
it was horrifying.
With the guard that planted the body parts in the garden just to fill out the lurid picture.
Yes, and I mean, what's complicated about a case like that is obviously that the police didn't handle it particularly well, and that it's a racialized story. And of course, gay men. So, you know, you've got a lot of pieces in a story like that. It just needs to be handled very thoughtfully. So I'm not saying we wouldn't do it, but we would do it very thoughtfully. We would try to do it thoughtfully. It's really hard to talk about dead kids. Like, I keep thinking of ideas and then making the kid alive in my head, like rewriting it in my mind. And there are certain stories that I'm sure none of us want to hear again in the same way, like a Bernardo story. I'm not sure that anybody in Canada wants a retelling of that.
I know people who had to go to the courtroom
and cover that
and cover it. And they've never been the same again. So thank you for not showing that.
But didn't Law and Order, one of the franchises, tackle that in the States? They did.
I mean, and first of all, I need to say none of our stories are docudramas, right? We make it up. We take a headline. We use it as an inspiration, a place to start from. But we try not to make it like the real story because it wouldn't be entertaining. It wouldn't be interesting if it's a story we all know the ending to. You're not going to want to watch it on TV. So just to be really clear, these stories are inspired by headlines, but not at all retelling. I was going to say I am, however, interested in killers who are out of jail and living among us. Like that's a different facet of a familiar story that we might tackle.
Let's go back to Wendy, who wants to talk about Stevie Cameron, your mother.
And, your mom.
Because that's probably an odd but appropriate segue.
I have very fond memories of your mom. So she was a journalist, and you know I'm old, but she's like really old. So she was a real pioneer, and she wrote a number of books about politics and about crime, and she just did a lot. So I'm just wondering whether, I think that you're hardly the only female showrunner, but I wonder how much of being raised by your mom has influenced where you are today, because she is pretty amazing.
She is pretty amazing, and she was a massive fan of yours, Wendy. She loved you.
Aww.
Really?
Yeah, well, I love her too.
She sadly has Parkinson's and dementia. So she is, I say was, not because she's dead, but because her mind's not the same, which is just a terrible thing to happen to somebody whose mind was their everything, you know? Anyway, but I think a huge part of why I do this job is because of my mom. Certainly, my mom was a strong feminist, and she raised my sister, who's my partner in our company.
Amy.
She raised us to be strong. We always knew we were going to be working hard, and that we were as capable as any guy in the room. And she made sure that we really understood that and felt that. And then also there was the fact that she was obsessed with crime. And, you know, whether it was murder mystery books or her own research, politics, serial killers, I mean, and so she was always, you know, if she heard a siren, she would chase it. Literally, we'd be on our way to school and suddenly following a fire truck or whatever. So I think that was a big topic of conversation around our house. We knew police officers and journalists. And so I think my interest in that stuff comes very much through being my mother's daughter.
Yeah, I was really struck by, well, your mother means a lot to me, but also about how you wrote that you're inspired by two things that Virginia Woolf said. One is have a room of your own, and the other is make enough money to support yourself. And those sound like such old ideas now, but they're not. Like, that's sort of the way that I was raised by a mom, sort of on her own. And I think those principles, it's a little hard to pay for a room of your own.
They go hand in hand, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't usually get one without the other.
They do, but that was very important to my mother. She kept saying, you can't rely on somebody else to cover your expenses. You have to be able to have your own life. And it was very important to her. You know, and as a single mother myself, I'm glad I learned that lesson.
So what do you watch now? She says, changing the topic.
What do you watch? What are your favorite television shows? And they don't necessarily have to be crime related.
I always forget when I'm asked this question. And so I just can think of the things I'm watching now. I have to admit, sometimes when I'm in the process of making television, I don't watch it as much because it starts to feel a bit like homework. I start analyzing it and either thinking, oh my God, they're such geniuses, I should just quit. Or I think, oh my God, why did they put that storyline in that order? Or, you know, sometimes when I'm in the real thick of it, I don't watch that much television. Right? I love Slow Horses. That's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, that's in production. I think they're going into their fourth season now.
And he used to be hot.
He still is, actually. We're talking Gary Oldman and Tim Roth, and they all walked in a fashion show recently. Gary Oldman looks like a bag of shit thanks to the makeup people. He does not look that bad.
And doesn't wash his hair and doesn't
wash his clothes. But God, and, that is a great show.
Good.
Yeah.
It's so good. But anyway, I hope that it works for you, Tassie. I hope that it gets extended, and I hope that people will see Toronto and go, yahoo!
We can make great shows here about here. It doesn't have to be about other people. So it's been a pleasure to meet you, Tassie.
Yeah. Thank you, Tassie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was so nice about Stevie Cameron and sad.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it happened to my mom too, the dementia. And I Googled her because, you know, she was a pioneer way before I started. And she's 80.
Only 80.
That's what happens to people. That was what's happened to my mom. And it's sad. So she was still there, my mom.
But that's what's heartbreaking. And it always worries me that it seems to be that these big brains, these highly creative, articulate people, it's a greater loss because, you know, they're still alive, but everything that you know about them has disappeared. And you know, hell, it happened with my dad as well. It's just, anyway.
Well, it's so nice that she's really imprinted on, we haven't met Amy, the sister, but I'm sure it's the same thing. She's really imprinted on Tassie. And Tassie's now doing something really cool. And this series, I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, it sort of goes back to your idea of we love it when Americans think we're great. and here's this American series, and it's so cool. Like Lake Ontario, like I've been in Lake Ontario repeatedly.
In it.
Yes, in it. Everything looks so familiar. It's
and
kind
beautiful,
of
even though they show the, obviously, because it's a crime series, they show the gritty side of it and they don't flinch about that because that's what the show is about. But it is Toronto as Toronto. And I always feel like a hick going, oh, well, we're a world-class city. As soon as you say that, you're not. But it is just, it is a beautiful city and we knock it all the time. And to be able to see it in this light is a nice thing. And Tassie's obviously doing a fantastic job and enjoying it. So yeah, nothing wrong there. Oh, I got to tell you something you can't do. I had a friend in law school, you know, he's now a very well-established lawyer, but he was doing a moot trial in law school. He was at Osgoode
Arwig.
No, you don't do that until your King's Counsel now. But he asked the judge, it was like a, what they call a moot court, like a fake a trial. And he asked the judge if he could approach the bench. And the judge said,
what is this, law and order?
We don't approach the bench in Canada. You don't get to have a little confab with the judge. Sit down.
Wow.
So much of what we know about the judicial system is based on American court dramas. And it is quite different here. And yes, we do wigs.
Can you do the sound effects one more time?
Okay, wait. Dun, dun. Do you know, there's a whole story about how Mike Post created that sound, and it's a story in itself, and you should look it up because it's fascinating. It's got layer upon layer upon layer of sound effects to make it. So it's hard to do on your own.
I won't do it. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Women of Ill Repute was written and produced by Maureen Holloway and Wendy Mesley, with the help from the team at the Sound Off Media Company and producer Yet Belgraver.
Hey, listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa. And this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirt bags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.